This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 207 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. How are we, Max?
Doing well, David. Doing well. Getting ready for a little road trip, I think. Going to go off on a bit of an adventure, I hope.
I just hope for your sake the weather holds out.
That's right. That's the key to this particular adventure.
And what we're talking about is Max is going to try to find a point where he can sit there and watch the moon cross in front of the sun and make a really large shadow. I'm going to walk out of my living room and be able to be satisfied with only a 75%. So, but that all depends upon the weather in this case. But we got a really good show. And I got to say, Max, I was a little clever tonight. So, well, in our topics for this evening, we've got AirMap isn't in Kansas anymore. The X-47B comes out from behind the curtain as the MQ-25. Someone sent their drone flying after the Queen. DJI says you can fly without a brain. We'll follow the road or the race to the Emerald City. And a drone is brave and has a heart. So I guess with that, Mr. Wizard, should we take this show on the road?
Let's do it.
Well, our first story comes from airmap.com and is a press release and a case study. And that is the Kansas case study, which is a UAS traffic management system that is going to come to the state of Kansas.
That's right. This is something that AirMap has been working on. In fact, when we talked, Dave, was it last episode we talked about LANC, the low altitude authorization and notification capability?
Yes, we did.
And AirMap is one of the 12 companies that is part of that group that's been put together by the FAA. And we see now that AirMap has announced a partnership with the Kansas Department of Transportation to deploy the AirMap platform across the state. So we're getting a traffic management system in Kansas. Now, they say their goal is, quote, to open more airspace for drone operations, support Kansas' growing community of drone operators, and ensure that the skies are safer for all. So very cool. Well, if you're not aware, David, I'm sure you can explain how Kansas is actually a state that has a lot of aviation going on in it.
Yeah, Kansas, or specifically Wichita, has been the home of Boeing, Lockheed. Various companies have built aircraft in Wichita, and Kansas has always been sort of one of those aerospace hubs that you don't really think of Wichita or Kansas as being an aviation community. But this is a really good state to do this test in because of the amount of air traffic that is in that state. Specifically, it's a big hub for general aviation, Beech and Cessna. So it's a good choice. You're dealing with a large aviation community, but you're not having to deal with the large cities or metropolises that you get in either the Pacific Coast or the Atlantic Coast.
Yeah, that's a really good point, David. The environment there, not only the physical environment, but the interest in aviation that sort of permeates Kansas makes it an ideal place to start. AirMap says that the platform will be available to Kansas airports, to state colleges and universities, as well as to government agencies. One thing that that I noticed, David, in this press release from AirMap is when we talked about the low altitude authorization and notification capability, LANC. We mentioned that that was going to be deployed initially in 50 airports. And in this press release, they link to another page that has the 50 airports listed out there. So we'll have that in the show notes, or a link to that in the show notes, if you're interested in seeing which airports are amongst the first 50. It's kind of a mixture of, well, a few large airports, but many, many smaller airports as well. It's not just all major, major airports.
Well, no, and I brought up the list. I mean, there's some interesting Miami International, you know, Phoenix Sky Harbor, Anchorage, are Class B airspaces. There's a lot of Class E airspaces. Worth Smith Air Force Base, Columbus Airport, Jamestown Regional Airport. Let's see if I can find anything near me.
Yeah, I didn't see any that I recognized as close to
San Jose, Reno, Tahoe. So there's a good smattering across the board. So check that link in the show notes at theuavdigest.com. And see what's available, if there's one near you and you might be able to help participate in the study.
That's right.
So what's next, Max?
Next, we have an article from thedrive.com. Northrop Grumman MQ-25 drone tanker testbed emerges at Plant 42 in California. Now, we talked about the U.S. Navy's MQ-25 Stingray drone. And the idea is that it's a carrier launch tanker, an unmanned tanker. And the idea is that it would extend the range of combat aircraft coming off the carrier. Well, four development contracts have already been awarded for the MQ-25 Stingray, and thus Boeing, Lockheed Martin, General Atomics, and Northrop Grumman. And as the article points out, so far we haven't seen any images, mock-ups, nothing visual that describes what these four companies might be looking at. But now Aviation Week has obtained some photos, and they've shared one of them with the public. This is kind of an early thing, but it is kind of interesting, isn't it, David?
Ah, it's like good old aviation leak in space technology. Grainy photographs taken from fence lines. But what it is we've talked a lot about the X-47B, which was the first unmanned aircraft to autonomously take off and land from an aircraft carrier. It also was one of the first aircraft to take refuel. What Northrop Grumman has done is taken the X-47B, which there were two of, and they have one, and they've modified it to be a testbed for the MQ-25 bid. They've done this by hanging on one side an additional fuel tank, and the other side of the other wing to counterbalance it, a buddy refueling pack. So it's an interesting way that they're handling this. They're not making the refueling system internal to the airframe, but they're actually hanging a buddy store, which could keep costs down because the buddy stores are readily available. Currently, the primary air-to-air refueler for the Navy is, believe it or not, an F-18E or F, where they load it up with fuel and one of these buddy stores. So it's an interesting step one to the MQ-25. It's come a long way from the unmanned aerial combat vehicle to now and reconnaissance aircraft to being more of an air-to-air refueler. but we'll see what the other people, namely Lockheed Martin, have to say about this. So what we'd like to thank Aviation Leak for being old school and looking, finding the those grainy photographs like I used to drool over in the 90s when all of the stealth aircraft were coming out.
Now, we should probably mention that as a test bed, we don't really know, I guess, David, if this is the final configuration or even approaching the final offering. I guess it kind of hinges on, you know, what systems are they testing right now? Are they testing the actual aircraft, or it could be other subsystems that are being tested with this particular X-47B? But this will be fascinating to watch, I think.
Absolutely. And keep in mind that the X-47B is a very proven test bed at this point. So
yeah,
modifying it to hang refueling tanks on it is not a bad way to start. Whether that's going to be Northrop's final submission, I don't know, but it at least gives them a step up on the process. So on August 17th, HMS Queen Elizabeth sailed into Portsmouth Harbor, which is going to be its home base. It's the Royal Navy's first aircraft carrier in about 10 years. And it's like our USS Ford. It's a brand new aircraft carrier. But while it was sitting in dock, someone decided to, not necessarily in Portsmouth, but someone flew a drone over it. So I guess this is our weekly You're Grounded file. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, and it did come down. This DJI Phantom was being flown by a Black Isle Images photographer, and he claims that the landing was unintentional. I guess he was flying close, I don't know how close, to the Queen Elizabeth, the aircraft carrier, and the Phantom sensed high winds, and so it does what it's supposed to do, which is to land itself. So it dropped down, but it happened to land itself right on the carrier deck. In fact, there's a photograph out there taken by the drone from the carrier deck. Very interesting. So this particular photographer, I think, had enough presence of mind to say, okay, this is not a good situation. So he presented himself to the guards, the armed guards who were watching over the carrier. And he says, quote, "But no one seemed too concerned." And he also apparently gave the authorities his phone number, but nobody called. So the first part of this story, I guess, is that he was able to land reportedly unintentionally on this new aircraft carrier without any consequence.
Well, so far, I'm sure there will be a consequence, but it's hard to believe, though, that the really first landing on the HMS Queen Elizabeth was a DJI Phantom. I don't think that's true. But
that would make for a good story if it was true. You know, 20 years from now, the trivia contest. What was the first aircraft to land on the HMS Queen Elizabeth? A DJI Phantom.
Yeah, it's kind of a bizarre story, but if you watch the video, it's a really cool video flying over the HMS Queen Elizabeth. It's a very interesting looking aircraft carrier with its ski jump, and it's very modern looking. What is kind of amazing, though, is remember that whole thing about flying within 5 miles of an airfield? Wouldn't an aircraft carrier be a floating airfield?
I guess you would have to conclude that, wouldn't you?
At least at minimum, it's a military installation. You're not supposed to be flying over those either, though if so we'll have to follow up on the story. I'd love to see what there has to be some sort of consequences, but we'll go on from there. But that does lead into the next story, which is what happens if you want to fly your DJI aircraft in a environment where you're not really want to be doing that. And DJI develops option for pilots to fly without internet data transfer. What does that mean? You can unplug the DJI product from the geofencing. So, and this is from DJI.com/their newsroom. So what do you think, Max?
Well, this this comes on the heels of the U.S. Army ordering everyone to stand down, basically, with the DJIs because of the apparent feature of the DJI drones, at least some of them, to communicate data back to the servers. And of course, we talked about this previously, and it has caused kind of an uproar. DJI says that this ability to turn off internet connectivity was actually being planned before the Army published its directive there. But they call it local data mode. And in that mode, DJI apps will stop sending or receiving any data over the internet. So you give up some things, obviously, when you do that, besides the geofencing and local maps that you mentioned, David. Also, that would turn off getting the latest software updates, correct radio frequency and power requirements, and any newly issued flight restrictions. So that connectivity offers some value to you as a drone operator. But if you can turn it off, you'll have that ability coming up, but you'll have to forego some of these other features.
And we got a quote from Brendan Schulman, who has been a friend of the show from the beginning, who is the DJI Vice President of Policy and Legal Affairs. He says, quote, "We are creating a local data mode to address the needs of our enterprise customers, including public and private organizations that are using DJI technology to perform sensitive operations around the world." And, quote, "DJI is committed to protecting the privacy of its customers' photos, videos, and flight logs. Local data mode will provide added assurances for customers with the heightened data security needs." So the implication there is why the Army was concerned was information was being fed back to DJI's corporate headquarters, and it was data like video links and anybody flying over a military installation was getting things videotaped and sent back to our not-so-friendly ally, China. So interesting that they've moved on this quicker and stepped it up. But I do remember, Max, when we started talking about geofencing after the guy crashed the Phantom into the White House grounds, where they were immediately threw up the geofencing.
Yes.
That one of those discussions was to be able to turn it off if you needed to.
Yeah. Now, DJI says that this local mode feature will be part of future versions of the DJI apps, and they expect to start making those available over the next several weeks. So it's a near-term change that we can be looking forward to.
Well, that concludes the DJI portion of the show. Let's talk about racing. And this is from our Slack listener team, specifically Isaac, and GeekWire.com. The PAL, or Pro Aerial League, is setting up a new race league with their first inaugural event in Everett, Washington.
That's right. It's got some interesting features. It's team-based, so there will be six teams. Each team is to have six pilots on the team, and according to the league, the pilots will race through multiple types of challenges in order to determine the best team in terms of speed, skill, and strategy. And they plan on running these indoors. Stadiums, things like that. So they're, I think, doing that with the spectator in mind. So if you've got you know, a hockey rink or a stadium or someplace like that that has, of course, seats all around it, should offer some good views. So that inaugural event is August 19th, so it's just a few days or a day away from when this is released. And that'll be at the Xfinity Arena, as Dave said, in Everett, Washington. Now, the drones, it's a spec series, so they're all the pilots will be using the same drone, and that will be the Riot 250R Pro, produced by Thrust UAV Commercial. It's kind of your typical quad racing drone. It's a 250-millimeter carbon fiber body, 5-inch props. It's got a polycarbonate skirt, and within that skirt are a set of 52 RGB LEDs. Now, you can imagine what those might be used for, because the LED colors can be set in software. So I guess these little guys can produce some interesting visual effects with that. According to the Thrust UAV Commercial website, these things go for $549 a piece. So that's not a bad price for a little racing drone.
And there'll be a follow-up race in Seattle on October 21st and 22nd. And maybe we should reach out to the Pro Aerial League, and maybe we can get them on in September between the two races. What I thought was kind of interesting about this little racing drone is I'm not used to seeing three-bladed props on a quadcopter, right, Max? Normally it's two blades. In this case, it's three blades, which is interesting because balancing a three-blade is a lot harder than balancing a two-blade. So, but I do like the fact that they're all flying the same UAF, you know, because I'm old-school racing. You know, I like IROC, which for those people who are younger than Max and I, was a race in the 70s called the International Race of Champions, where it was about driving and not necessarily about the cars, where they were all the same cars. So I do like the fact that they're all flying the same drone. And now, mind you, the racing drones aren't really the sexiest thing in the world. They're very practical because they tend to break. But we'll have definitely video and links in the show notes. And we got some breaking news, some good news from an NBC affiliate, WSLS, in Virginia. And that is, first drone-assisted rescue in Southside is a high-flying success. Dan River in Virginia, a logger was pinned down by a tree that fell on his hands. Danville's life-saving crew created a plan and traveled to the location, and just last month, they had received training to become certified drone operators.
Yeah, and as they were traveling to the scene and making their plan, they knew that they wanted to use these drones as part of it, kind of to provide sort of overall surveillance, I guess, from a safety standpoint. And it turned out that they were very effective at that. There's a quote from Brian Fox. He's the Danville Life Saving Crew Assistant Director. And he said, "We were able to navigate the boats around some circumstances in the water, some debris, some rock formations that the rescuers didn't see from the boats as they were trying to navigate." So in this particular case, those drones came in handy. But I think this is a great story, and I'm sure that the Danville life-saving crew was really enthusiastic about being able to, you know, use their new tools and their new training so quickly. I imagine that this kind of thing is something that, you know, they'll be using a lot in the future, as well as, you know, other teams, other first responder teams across the country. It's a great tool.
Eyes in the sky.
Yeah,
and a good use for them in real, eyes in the sky in real time. So it's interesting that they could navigate because of the UAV. So that's a good story. We have a video of the week, Max. I didn't pick this one; you did. I hate putting this as a video of the week because I don't condone it, but it's a very interesting video. And this was from our friend 810 Mac on Slack. Gatwick drone incident on 2 July. On Sunday, July 2nd, 2017, a drone was spotted on the approach path to Gatwick Airport. This is the disruption it caused. So what do you think of the video, Max?
I think it's really, really impressive. What they've done here is produced an animation showing the tracks of the other aircraft, the commercial flights in the area, and how they were affected by this drone showing up. Obviously, they had to shut down the runways. It shows the holding patterns that the airliners had to circle in. I think the runway was opened, but then the drone reappeared. Holding patterns were starting to fill up, and so they had to create a new holding pattern farther away. The disruption just caused by, you know, some person flying a drone into the airport airspace is just massive. It just affected so many flights. And this is a kind of a cool visual representation of that, something that might help people realize how something that they might think as simple as flying a drone and take a look at some airliners and just how disruptive that can be.
Well, I think our trip down Oz has been complete. We've saved someone. We've talked about brains. We've talked about heart. We've talked about the Emerald City, which for people who don't know is Seattle. And basically had a good time going down the yellow brick road.
There we go. Well, we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. You can find our homepage at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go right to the show notes for this episode, take a look at some of these articles, see some of these videos, you can just simply visit theuavdigest.com/207.
And of course, we'd love for you to join our Slack listener team. Like, we've got two good stories tonight. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And just say you'd like to be part of the Slack team, and Max and I will send you an invitation. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. Of course, you can become one of our Twitter followers. We don't have as many as the current president of the United States, but we do have an active Twitter following, and that's at UAV Digest. You can leave us some feedback, and we really appreciate when you do that so other people can find us. You can do that on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can purchase some swag at Cafe Press. You can become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And of course, I'm looking forward to meet some of our Canadian or Northern United States listeners at the Big Drone Show in late September. So if you know you're going to be in that area in Toronto, the last week, Thursday and Friday, the last week in September, and you're going to be at the show, let me know. I'd love to meet some of our listeners. And so I guess on that note, I'm going to say, this is David in Philly wishing good weather for my co-host as he goes searching for the moon over Nashville.
Yeah, and this is Max in Hartford, soon to depart.
And folks, to be honest, he's blowing off Airplane Geeks to do it. So this is a very serious event. Max doesn't ever give up podcasting. So goodbye, and thanks for listening.